Just prior to the Paris attack, over 40 were killed and more than 200 wounded in two suicide bombings in the neighborhood of Bourj al-Barajaneh in southern Beirut. ISIS claimed credit and then a day later attacked Paris. And that sparked a huge reaction on both mainstream and social media. For a while, the world seemed bedecked in the French flag. But amid the displays, a question was raised and raised again. Why Paris and not Beirut? Why didn't the global media mourn for victims in Lebanon? Habib Bataa, founder of BeirutReport.com, both asked and answered the question in a post for Al Jazeera. He said for him, it started with a symbol of solidarity that wasn't.
Some Lebanese news sites had posted a picture of the Sydney Opera House lit up with the Lebanese flag. And people had spread this around saying, oh, isn't that nice that, you know, Australia is mourning Lebanese victims because there's so many Lebanese immigrants living in Australia. It turned out that the photo was a photoshopped fake. But I think it really underscored the fact that, sadly, there was no semblance of mourning for Beirut on the scale that France had been mourned.
Now, you noted that the coverage of the two events were not equal. Some journalists, like Max Fischer in Vox, chafe at the charge that the Beirut attacks weren't reported. He said it was covered extensively in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the AP, CNN, The Economist, even the Daily Mail. It's just, he says, that their audiences really don't care about mass acts of violence outside the West.
It's not really about the number of articles. It's really about how the articles are written, the framing and the adjectives that are used to describe the victims, for example. The Paris articles were really intimate. We knew about the places where it happened. We knew that there was a rock band playing. You know, some people might identify with that. We knew that there was a stadium and a cafe. But in Beirut, there were almost no quotes, actually, from the victims. There was no mention in Beirut of the school, the hospital, the crowded marketplace that was near this explosion. That kind of rich detail was missing from the initial reporting. The reports overwhelmingly focused on the geopolitical aspects. You know, this is a Hezbollah territory. These people are just kind of pawns in a geopolitical conflict.
And specifically, you pointed to the language used to describe the neighborhood there as a Hezbollah stronghold. Like this.
The bombers struck a Hezbollah stronghold in southern Beirut. Hezbollah has been fighting ISIS in Syria.
43 people are killed in two suicide blasts in a Hezbollah stronghold in southern Beirut.
This neighborhood is a stronghold of Hezbollah, the Lebanese militia fighting alongside Bashar al-Assad's regime in Syria.
And that's actually kind of adopting the language of ISIL itself, which is saying that, you know, these aren't people, these are Hezbollah people. They're kind of part of this war, so they kind of deserve it almost. So I think that really colors our perception. Is it just a tragedy, or is it a tragedy that's really kind of understandable?
And you notice that the language in the New York Times headline changed twice. First it was, blast hits Hezbollah's stronghold in Beirut, killing dozens, worst bombing in years. Then, deadly blast hits Hezbollah area in southern Beirut. And then finally, deadly blast hits crowded neighborhood in southern Beirut.
There has been this ongoing discussion about the term stronghold for the past couple years or so. People have complained very loudly about it. So I think that pressure did play a role here. The New York Times itself ends up doing a whole new Beirut story 2 days later, almost like a complete retake, where they really drastically change their tone and start interviewing the victims. You had this influx from, you know, CNN to Time Magazine, the New York Times and others, who basically went ahead and did reports quoting a lot of this critiques and quoting even bloggers who actually raised this issue as well. So Beirut kind of in this case has come to symbolize a discussion now about why do we care more about Western lives? And I think that the broader impact of that is our lack of compassion for other parts of the world. But then on the other hand, we had a lot of articles that came out more recently kind of saying, well, it's the reader's fault, kind of very defensive point of view, saying that, you know, we kind of reject this critique and you people don't want to read about world news. That's why we don't publish it on our websites. I mean, we have a system set up where our media is dominated by infotainment and a lot of space is taken up by celebrities.
All right. We've all heard those critiques, but let me just drill down past the triviality of our media and all of that down to the level of empathy you referred to. We are wired to care about our own. We care about what's familiar to us. There's a perception of Beirut in the West of a city that is far away and always at war. And maybe Western news consumers and journalists expect attack in Beirut, but they don't in Paris. And they're also familiar with the idea of Paris. People care about what they recognize. The media reflect that. How do you get around that feedback loop? Because you can write those stories over and over and over again, and the result may just be fatigue. Do you have an answer to this?
Maybe we have to look at how we can be more innovative in our storytelling. We can also look how we can connect our audience to those living in foreign countries. Instead of, you know, writing about them as pawns in a political game, maybe we can kind of look at them like we look at our own citizens and try to find those same stories. You know, there's also stories of heroism in the Beirut bombing where a man tackled a suicide bomber.
Adil Termos, a father of two who threw himself at the second suicide bomber who was approaching a mosque. This was actually covered by CNN.
It was. It took a little while, but there are probably a lot of Adil Termos in other countries, and you know, in Pakistan and Africa. Maybe we don't even know about them. But the more connected we are, the more people have a channel to talk back to the media when they have actually messed up. We are seeing a richer environment, a richer kind of give and take. It is encouraging to see that some media are starting to take this conversation seriously.
Habib, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Habib Bhatta is a Beirut-based journalist who runs BeirutReport.com.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.